Carlton Hotel in Washington, D.C., a testimonial dinner is given tonight in honor of former Secretary of State George C. Marshall. The occasion, the second anniversary of former Secretary Marshall's speech, which first outlined the plan for European reconstruction that now bears his name. Norwegian Ambassador Wilhelm Morgenstierna will now introduce Paul Hoffman, Administrator of the ECA. Mr. Hoffman will introduce former Secretary of State Marshall, who will then present President Truman. First, Ambassador Morgenstierna.
Mr. President, General Marshall, Mr. Vice President, Mr. Speaker, distinguished guests, the ambassadors and ministers of the 16 countries members of the Organization for European Economic Cooperation, appropriately called the Marshall Plan countries, deeply appreciate this opportunity to pay a tribute to General George C. Marshall. It is 2 years today since he made that eventful speech at Harvard University, which he himself modestly referred to as remarks by the Secretary of State. Rarely, if ever, has a speech led to such positive, far-reaching, and almost immediate results. But perhaps only in the perspective of history will the world realize to what extent the European Recovery Program has been a decisive factor at one of the fateful crossroads of human destiny. In his Harvard speech, General Marshall emphasized that his program was not directed against any country or any doctrine, but only against hunger, poverty, desperation, and chaos. The fundamental idea of the Marshall Plan was, of course, that the countries of Europe should do their utmost themselves, and through close cooperation with other European countries, to rebuild their shattered economies. The role of the United States should consist of friendly aid in the drafting and carrying out of an overall European reconstruction program. Time only permits me to say in all brevity that this plan has been more successful than any of us dared to hope. It has manifested itself in increased output in the factories, mines, and farms of the countries concerned. Speaking of the country which I know best, I can frankly say that I do not know what would have happened to Norway without the Marshall Plan. We Norwegians are accustomed to being self-dependent. We want to continue to be self-dependent just as quickly as hard work and rigorous austerity will make it possible. This goes, I know, for all the 16 member countries. The Marshall Plan has done more than stimulating and extending production and increasing scant rations. It has given courage and confidence to peoples who had gone through too much to carry their burden alone. One thing I know that all the 16 of us will want to say, what the American people is doing is not being done out of superabundance. It is done, and it is keenly felt, by every taxpayer and every household in this great and generous land. And so on this anniversary, we are happy, on behalf of our respective nations, to pay tribute to General Marshall and his country. At all times, he has stood immovably for principle and refused to pull back the frontiers of freedom, democracy, and justice. He realized that the fight had not been fully won until the fundamental causes for which our young men had given their lives had been safeguarded. But even General Marshall could not have accomplished what he did if he had not had the unlimited confidence and support of the President of the United States, who at all times so clearly and persistently saw the issues involved in securing peace with freedom. We went through a time when the hard-won freedom and freedoms and human rights of the peoples of the Western world were in deathly danger. How close the free world came to defeat, we shall perhaps never know. America stopped into the breach and saved the world. What a chapter in the history of the unceasing struggle for human freedom. To us, the representatives of the Marshall Plan countries, it is indeed a memorable privilege to have this opportunity here and now to say to our honored guest and to the President, the Congress, and the people of this country that thank you, which we know is in the hearts of our countrymen. I now have the great honor and pleasure to introduce to you the man who, as the administrator of the ECA, has done such a magnificent job in organizing and supervising this great undertaking. Without the ceaseless efforts, patience, and kindly will to understand and cooperate with Europe, which Mr. Hoffman and his associates have shown, even the greatest idea could not have succeeded. The Honorable Paul G. Hoffman.
Mr. Ambassador, Mr. President, General Marshall, Your Excellencies, and fellow guests, only rarely in any generation is an address given which contains an idea so potent that the course of history may be redirected. It is even more exceptional when an address not only contains such a dynamic idea, but also a clear directive as to how its potentialities can be realized. Such an address with General George C. Marshall's at Harvard University on June 5th, 1947. Ambassador Morgan Stirney has been gracious in saying that ECA has administered the Marshall Plan effectively. If that is true, it is because the activities of ECA have been kept squarely beamed both to General Marshall's basic idea and to the directives for their implementation. We have concentrated our activities wholly on helping our European partners in their struggle to restore those conditions which give men the opportunity to live in decency, dignity, and freedom. Increasingly, we have come to believe that this is the most effective way to bring peace to the world. We have remembered that General Marshall insisted that if there was to be substance and vitality in the recovery program, it must be European in origin and operation. We have kept our role consistent with that concept. The recovery programs of the participating nations have been planned and operated by the nationals of those nations and by their central agency, the Organization for European Economic Cooperation. General Marshall, the military genius, has an enduring place in world history. But in my opinion, it is General Marshall, the apostle of peace, through the Marshall Plan, who will live forever in the hearts of free men.
General Marshall.
Mr. President, Ambassador, Speaker, Your Excellencies, gentlemen. I am highly honored this evening by the presence of the President of the United States, by the generous expressions of Mr. Hoffman, the leading figure of the recovery program, in introducing me, and especially by you gentlemen, the ambassadorial and ministerial representatives of the 16 nations engaged in the greatest cooperative effort in history to make the world safe again, and prosperous, and peaceful. To be your guest tonight, having in mind all that you represent in the history of civilization and in the struggle for freedom today, is a very special honor that makes me feel both humble and grateful beyond mere words to express. In thinking over what I might say tonight, the thought occurred to me that you would probably be interested in a first hand account of the events and conditions which finally led to the statement made by me at Harvard 2 years ago today, which initiated the present recovery program and all that it involves. I took over the office of Secretary of State in late January 1947, with a date already set for a meeting of the Council of Foreign Ministers in Moscow in the following March. The Senate of the United States was about to ratify the treaties for the satellite countries, which had been finally agreed to by the Council of Foreign Ministers in December of 1946. The next step, so far as we could see, was the completion of the Austrian Treaty, then being drafted by the deputies of the Council in London, and to reach the basic agreements necessary for a unified German economy and for the conclusion of a German peace treaty. I went to Moscow with a very sincere purpose of finding agreement with my three associate foreign ministers, if it was at all possible to do so, to bring about a feeling of security for the future, along with a reasonable hope of restored prosperity and individual freedom. After weeks of futile and frustrating negotiations, it was apparent that we would not, at least for the time being, be able to organize all of Germany into a sound economic union. Something, therefore, was immediately necessary to meet the desperate situation in Germany and the increasing cost of governing a portion only of the country. A new level of industry was indicated, which would be necessary if we were to operate without the participation of the Soviet-controlled zone. And this meant a new schedule for plant removals on reparation accounts, since more plants would be needed to support the country controlled by us, and therefore a new and higher level of industry than had been previously agreed upon by the four allies on the basis of a unified Germany. However, it was late in May of 1947 before this new level could be accurately determined and agreed upon. By that time, it was increasingly apparent that our immediate problem was a far wider one than the problem of Germany alone, that a serious situation was rapidly growing up throughout Western Europe in general, and that much more drastic action was to be necessary if a serious dissolution of stable government in that portion of Europe was to be prevented. To those of us in this country directly concerned in this matter, it was evident that special financing by the United States would be necessary in order to break the vicious circle in which the general economy of Western Europe was laboring. A situation existed which was beggaring the people and breeding reactions that lead to the development of police states where the liberties of the individual are lost and the forward march of the civilization of the world is set back to an alarming degree. It was also apparent to us that mere relief measures would in the end be not only futile, but would be very wasteful. The United States government could not embark on such a program. But given the compulsion of the desperate state of affairs then existing in Europe, there appeared to be a strong probability that the sovereign nations concerned might be persuaded to get together in mutual cooperation to a degree never before reached, which cooperation with our assistance would make possible the rehabilitation of the countries involved. It was based on this conception that the suggestion for the action leading to the European Recovery Plan was made. We felt that this country must not become involved in the initial agreements and recommendations. That was for those nations who were willing to enter into the cooperative effort, which is now the basis for the recovery program. I think you will be interested in our expectations as to what would be the response to the Harvard suggestion. You will recall that the suggestion was not limited to any particular part of Europe. We thought that it would be generally accepted in principle, though the acceptance might not, in time, be followed by the degree of international cooperation and necessary concessions by sovereign states, which... The United States government could not embark on such a program. But given the compulsion of the desperate state of affairs then existing in Europe, there appeared to be a strong probability that the sovereign nations concerned might be persuaded to get together in mutual cooperation to a degree never before reached, which cooperation, with our assistance, would make possible the rehabilitation of the countries involved. It was based on this conception that the suggestion for the action leading to the European Recovery Plan was made. We felt that this country must not become involved in the initial agreements and recommendations. That was for those nations who were willing to enter into the cooperative effort, which is now the basis for the recovery program. I think you will be interested in our expectations as to what would be the response to the Harvard suggestion. You will recall that the suggestion was not limited to any particular part of Europe. We thought that it would be generally accepted in principle, though the acceptance might not, in time, be followed by the degree of international cooperation and necessary concessions by sovereign states, which would be essential to the success of the program and to its acceptance by the United States. Frankly, we anticipated that considerable immediate opposition would be developed against the idea in this country. That this opposition did not make itself apparent for some weeks was due in all probability to the dramatic rapidity with which the European powers concerned rallied to a formal consideration of ways and means. History will give credit, I am sure, to those European statesmen who responded with such energy and vision to the needs of the moment. It was a matter of serious regret to us in this country that certain nations refused to participate, though it was evident in some instances that their peoples desired very earnestly to do so. Plainly, it was not a decision of peoples, but of small groups of arbitrary rulers responding to Soviet direction. History will decide how wise or how deplorable was their decision. What followed is well known to all of us, and some of you here present tonight have been leading actors in the enormous accomplishments of the past year, which in effect have reversed the trend of centuries, and in the words of Mr. Hoffman, have made more progress than since the days of Caesar. There's one phase of this affair which I think may not be fully understood and appreciated by my hosts, and that relates to the reaction of the American people. You can hardly be expected to understand fully. Certainly your people could never completely grasp what is in the mind of a man, say in Nebraska, regarding the intimate affairs of the people in Europe. He is a long distance from the seacoast that marks the boundary of this country in that direction. And even if he lived on the seacoast, there are many hundreds of miles of deep water between him and the trials and suffering, the conflicts and the traditions of the people so far distant. There is a great difference between reading history and actually living it. For generations, ever since the birth of this republic, our people have not only felt very remote in distance from Europe, but many of them are descendants of people who fled from Europe to escape the peculiar trials and limitations that fell upon people from time to time in the changing fortunes of that crowded but divided continent. Yet, seemingly in a moment, our American people found themselves in a position of not only the most intimate relationship with Western Europe, but called upon to make more and heavy contributions to the welfare of your people. To me, the impressive fact is that these people of the United States made an overwhelming and unhesitating decision to do their best to bring Western Europe back to peace and prosperity. There were, of course, speeches pro and con, but the American people rose to the occasion, to that world crisis, and declared themselves partners in the stupendous effort to restore Europe to a level of continuing peace. All participated, cities, towns, women's clubs, and the young people, even the little children, played a valuable part. That was and continues to be an impressive demonstration of the heart of America. And so it is hard to view this spirit of helpfulness, of unselfish public action, in the light of the disparagement and defamation that has been heaped upon us through the propaganda of dictatorships in a collection of police states where freedom, as we know it, and as the common people of this earth long for it, is lost to the tyranny of a few who completely dominate the many. There is much yet to be done, and it is vitally important to the world that it be done. The recovery program was directed to the renewal of a working economy in the world so as to permit the emergence of political and social conditions in which free institutions can exist. That task is being accomplished. I think, and I am advised, that the 16 nations concerned have in general met their estimates and in important instances have far exceeded them. But these are economic details. We must now see that the political and social conditions are developed to the degree necessary for a continuing peace and for prosperity. A feeling of security is essential to the future of Europe and to the world. Improved economy helps tremendously to that end. That alone, but in the light of conditions as they exist today, that alone is not enough. The Atlantic Pact is significant of the future steps that are necessary to a restored Europe. I feel that the prompt ratification of that pact is very important to the world, as is a continued and increasing cooperation on the part of all our countries in everything that that pact involves, as well as in the original recovery program. I am deeply indebted to you, gentlemen, for the distinguished honor with which you have greeted me tonight. I repeat, it is a high compliment to come to a mere citizen such as I now am. I am very grateful, and I thank you sincerely. Now, departing from my formal statement, I wish to say that I am overwhelmed by all that has been said, directed towards me in appreciation of what has been developed through the recovery program. I must say that as the Secretary of State, as the exponent of the foreign policy of the United States, I accept that in that light, and as the representative of my Supreme Chief, whose conception and whose policy I represented, the President of the United States, Mr. Truman.
President of the United States.
Mr. Ambassador, Your Excellency, General Marshall, distinguished guests, we of the United States are grateful to the other nations represented here tonight for honoring George C. Marshall. We are happy to join with them in this tribute to one of the greatest Americans of all time. That's my opinion. The nations represented here owe as much to General Marshall in war and in peace as they owe to any other one man in the world. He shaped the victory of the Allies in the recent war to an extent that may not yet be fully realized. He was one of co-equals among Joint Chiefs of Staff and Combined Chiefs of Staff. Yet by the authority of his character and the quality of his judgment, his influence was predominant in developing the strategy that brought complete victory. Nobody knows that any better than I do. Although General Marshall had richly earned the right to retire when the war ended, I asked him to give further of his great talent to the service of his country. His response was generous and complete, the response of a soldier and a patriot. His answer was, "Yes, Mr. President, I'll do it." I wish a great many other of our citizens would take that same attitude at times. As Secretary of State in a critical period, he rose to new heights of leadership and achievement. He had been the master strategist of the war. Now he rallied the democratic forces for peace. He found the free nations near despair and uncertain of their future course. He restored their confidence. He revived their belief in the strength and ultimate triumph of the cause of freedom and democracy. When our times are viewed in a long perspective of history, I think General Marshall will be more widely remembered for the peacetime effort which bears his name than for his services in the war years, important though they were. This is because the countries represented here tonight have embarked on a new venture in the history of nations. It is not new for nations to fight together against a common enemy, but it is new for nations to work together, as our nations are working together now in close economic cooperation to create a better life for their citizens and to build a lasting peace in the world. I believe that in years to come, we shall look back upon this undertaking as a dividing line between the old era of world affairs and the new. The dividing line between the old era of national suspicion, economic hostility, and isolationism, and the new era of mutual cooperation to increase the prosperity of people throughout the world. General Marshall would be known as one of those who brought this new era into being. But he would be the first to agree that it is more than the creation of statesmen. It comes from the minds and hearts of all the people. Our peoples are united in their determination to work together to deal with the basic problems of human life. This is the strength of the European Recovery Program, the Marshall Plan. It was developed in concert and is being carried out by cooperative action. Western Europe is recovering its economic strength. The spirit of democracy and self-reliance is resurgent. Economic recovery is matched by a revival of hope, confidence, and faith in the capacity of people to govern themselves wisely and justly and to build a better world through their own efforts. We've made real progress up to this time, but the ultimate test still lies ahead. None of us can afford to relax our efforts. I'm confident that with mutual devotion to our common cause, we shall succeed. Our great hope for peace and prosperity lies in the developing sense of unity among the free nations of the world. We have learned full well that no nation can live to itself alone. We've also learned that when the free peoples of the world stand united, they are unconquerable. The United States will continue to dedicate its strength and its resources to the building of a peaceful and prosperous world. That we will do in the spirit so well exemplified by this great American we are honoring here tonight.
From the nation's capital, CBS has brought you speeches by President Truman, former Secretary of State George C. Marshall, Paul Hoffman, ECA Administrator, and Norwegian Ambassador Wilhelm Morgenstierna. The occasion, a testimonial dinner in the Hotel Carlton being tendered former Secretary Marshall by the 16 Marshall Plan countries. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.